Shavuos marks the yard site of the famous Geret Tzedek of Vilna, Avram ben Avram. More precisely, the second day of Shavuos was the day on which he was not just executed, but burned alive in Vilna in front of jeering crowds on second day of Shavuos, 1749. His name that he was given at birth as a Polish Gentile was Valentin Potocki. The Potocki family was and is a very prominent family in Poland that stems from Polish nobility. My shul has a Polish employee, maintenance man, caretaker. He knows the name Potocki from his Polish background. And this Valentin Potocki, who was a sign of that very, very distinguished family in Poland, had traveled abroad to Paris to study. In Paris, he became interested in Judaism. He moved to Amsterdam, where he pursued further studies of Judaism. He converted while in Amsterdam, then came back to Vilna, and then to a small town not too far named Ilya, where he lived just a quiet, anonymous existence. He learned all day in shul. He was fed by the local Jewish women. According to some, he got smicha from Rav Avram Mann while he was there. And ultimately, he was arrested by the Christian church. He was tortured in an effort to force him to renounce his Judaism and to embrace Christianity yet again. His parents even begged him, "We'll give you one of our mansions." We're a fabulously wealthy family. "We'll give you one of our mansions. You can live as a Jew privately all day long, secluded in this house. No one's going to bother you. Just publicly say that you regret what you've done." Steadfastly refused and preferred to die as a Jew. Not just die, but as I mentioned before, burned alive. And his ashes were buried in the Vilna Cemetery. Ultimately, it was right next to the plot where the Vilna Gaon himself was buried. What's remarkable is you read a book entitled Noble Soul by Joseph Prouser. So he gives you a sense of who this Potocki family was. It wasn't just some rich Polish family. This was arguably the most powerful, most prominent family in all of Poland. This family owned more Polish real estate than the Polish king himself. It's astounding. The archbishop who headed the Polish Catholic Church was a Potocki. The chief of the Polish military was a Potocki. I mean, these were the most powerful, most influential family in the entire country. They owned banks in every single major Polish city. They owned a merchant fleet of ships on both the Mediterranean and the Black Sea. These were fabulously wealthy, powerful people. He actually has a picture of one of their estates. It's like this humongous mansion on an even larger, massive property. They were people who possessed astounding wealth. Then you think about all of that, and this individual was willing to give up all of that wealth, all of that luxury, sacrifice it all to live a life of poverty, a life of anonymity, living in some small little Jewish shtetl, being fed by the local Jewish women, living off of charity. And even after being offered to return to all of that, preferred to die a horrible death, being burned alive, rather than to renounce that life of poverty and Judaism he had chosen for himself. It's a remarkable, remarkable Mesiras Nefesh on so many levels. It's perhaps, interestingly enough, very similar to the story of Megillas Rus. Also, coincidentally, a Shavuos theme. Think about it from this perspective. Here is Rus, who is the daughter of Eglon Melech Moav. Once again, she is the princess of one of the most powerful nations at the time. Wealth, royalty, luxury, everything and anything she wants, she has got it made. And she's willing to cast it all behind her and to follow her penniless mother-in-law. Now that her husband has died, she's still not willing to go back to her life of wealth and comfort and luxury and royalty. She's throwing it all away as a widow without a penny to her name, following her mother-in-law, also a widow, without a penny to her name. Not just that, but the mother-in-law most likely could have expected a very, very cold welcome upon her return to Eretz Yisrael, having been viewed as one who abandoned her people, taking her wealth with her during a time of famine. No one looks kindly upon someone who is very well off and a leader of the community and then runs when life becomes somewhat challenging, rather than share in the responsibilities of leadership and assisting your fellow Jew, flee the country, and now you're coming back impoverished, a widow. The reception that she was likely to expect was not one that was going to be warm and welcoming necessarily. And Rus, regardless, throwing away the wealth, the luxury, the royalty, penniless, widowed, following her impoverished mother back to Eretz Yisrael, to the unknown, for life of Judaism. Ad kedei kach, then when she comes to Boaz's field, she's forced to pick up the leket on the floor that the laborers drop behind them as they're harvesting. What a humiliating lifestyle for a princess of Moab. And yet she prefers to live life this way, just picking up little pieces of grain from the fields that the laborers drop behind them. She was vulnerable. She's a young woman, all alone. Boaz has to reassure her that I will instruct those laborers not to lay hands on you. And this is life that she chooses for herself. The Netziv, in his Perush on the Sefri, cited in Sefer Mishpatzot Zov, says, when she tells Naomi, Basher Tamusi Amus, I will die as you die. Naomi's trying to encourage her, go back to Moab, don't bother converting, don't bother following me. She says to Naomi, no, as you die, I will die. Says in Ziv, what's Pshat? Pshat is, she was acknowledging that living life like this is not so worthwhile. There's no Olam Hazeh in this for me. I'm giving up my Olam Hazeh. I am pursuing a path that is devoid of any Olam Hazeh comforts. But what's in it for me is Basher Tamusi Amos. Olam Haba is what lies ahead for me. As you die and go to Olam Haba, so will I. That's why I'm doing this. There's nothing in Olam Hazeh to attract me to what I'm about to do. So says Netziv, is what Rus was expressing to Naomi. And the Avner Nezer writes, why was Rus given the most unthinkable reward of becoming the mother of Jewish royalty, the matriarch of David HaMelech, of Shlomo HaMelech, and ultimately of Melech HaMashiach himself? Unthinkable. A woman from Moab to be the matriarch of the most prominent members of the Jewish nation, the royalty of the Jewish nation. Pshat says Avner Nezer is because of this sacrifice. She had royalty, she gave it all up for a life of poverty, for a life of not even knowing if she'd be accepted, right? She was a Gioris from Moab, which at the time was so controversial. Many did not want to even accept her as a convert. She's willing to give up her life of royalty and luxury and comfort and pursue a life of Judaism, of poverty, of estrangement from even other Jews. For that, says Avner Nezer, she was rewarded with royalty itself. Perhaps we can suggest that it's not just that she is rewarded because she gave up royalty to pursue a life of Yiddishkeit and Judaism and Torah. But perhaps her confidence, her strength of character and strength of will to make such a sacrifice was bedafka because she possessed that midah of Malchus. Malchus represents leadership, represents confidence, represents a sense of knowing what's right, pursuing what's right, regardless of what others think. That's what Malchus is. It's that ability to hold oneself firm in the face of opposition or resistance, the ability to carry oneself with pride and confidence in what I'm doing, knowing that it is right. When one possesses a midah of Malchus, of I am proud of who I am and what I stand for, then one is capable of making even the ultimate self-sacrifice. And perhaps dafka because Rus was one who possessed that midah of Malchus, she was capable, therefore, of making that incredible self-sacrifice of giving it all up to pursue Yiddishkeit, Yahadus, and Torah, knowing, despite all of the naysayers around her, this is the path that I am going to pursue because this is the proper path to pursue. I once heard a remarkable story. A shocking story, if you will, that Rabbi Yonason Shippel related. I heard this from him already 25 years ago. The story he told was the following. He, at the time, or a few years earlier, when I heard it from him, it was in the mid-90s, so he was telling a story that happened like about 2-3 years earlier. Early 90s, he was a Talmud in Eretz Yisrael, Baltimore. And in 1993, a group of Syrian teenagers who had immigrated to the States from Aleppo came to Eretz Yisrael, Baltimore. And Yonason Shippel was asked by the administration of the yeshiva to be a mentor to some of these younger Syrian teenagers. He became close with a boy named Moshe Shwed. This boy was blind in one eye, teenager, and he had a large scar in that blind eye. He was incredibly sincere in his avodas Hashem. His davening was intense. And after they became close, Yonason Shippel asked this boy, what happened to your eye? So he told him the following shocking story. He said, in Aleppo, the Jews in Syria were not allowed to use public parks or public facilities. You want to live as a Jew? That's fine. But you can't use public park facilities. And this boy would walk to school every day, and there was a large public park between his school and his home, but not being allowed to walk through the park even, he had to circumvent the park. It took him an extra 45 minutes to walk home. Okay. One day at 13 years old, he's walking from school and he has to go to the bathroom. And his options are to make a dash through the park and get to the house in time, or spend 45 minutes walking around the park and maybe not make it home in time. So he's a 13-year-old kid. So he figured, okay, I'll take my chances. He runs through the park. He is stopped, arrested, and at 13, he's thrown into solitary confinement in a Syrian jail. In jail, he's given dirty water, he's given horse meat, which he wouldn't eat. And he's a 13-year-old boy in solitary confinement in Syrian jail. So he spent his time just saying Tehillim by heart. Apparently the minhag in Aleppo was that the Syrian bar mitzvah boys would have to recite Tehillim by heart in front of the community elders Shabbos afternoon of the bar mitzvah. A lot of Sefer Tehillim had to be memorized for that occasion. So here he is, he's 13 years old. He had memorized a lot of Tehillim not too long ago. So he spends his time in the solitary confinement cell saying Tehillim by heart. He said one night he was reciting Shema and the Syrian guard sees him and demands to know what he's doing. And when he acknowledged that he was praying, the guard takes a nail and shoves it into his eye. Syrian guard. So this is the story this teenager is telling Yonason Shippel in the Neir Yisrael Beis Medrash. 13-year-old kid when this happened to him. So they were conversing in Hebrew. I guess because Yonason Shippel did not speak Arabic and Moshe Shua did not speak English. So he's hearing this horrible story. And so Yonason Shippel says to him, Zehaya Shaveh? Was it worth it? So he's telling us the story now, Yonason Shippel, and he says that the reaction of this boy just like shocked him. Right then and there, in the middle of the Beis Medrash, this teenager stands up and starts yelling at the top of his lungs, Ata kofer, ata bikores, Yehudi tzarich lihiyot melech. That's what he says to him. He then stormed away, never spoke to Yonason Shippel again. Astounding story. So a 13-year-old kid, when this happened to him, and to him, to think or to question the value of what he was doing and what he suffered was kfira, because Yehudi tzarich liyot melech. A Jew has to have that midah of malchus. We are who we are. We do what we do because we're right. We have that confidence to do what we do because it's right. And you could do whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. And it makes no difference to me whatsoever. Malchus. Malchus. It's that midah of malchus that makes a Jew capable of the ultimate mesiras nefesh. That's the midah of rus, the midah of malchus, to make the ultimate mesiras nefesh. And perhaps that was in doubt of the midah of the Ger Tzedek of Vilna. He came from Polish royalty, but he had that confidence, that sense of pride in doing what he found and knew to be right, even if it demanded of him the ultimate mesiras nefesh. And each of these stories, the story of the Ger Tzedek, the story of Moshe Shved, the story of Megillas Rus, speaks to the Musar and the message of Shavuos. Because Shavuos, we know, is used in Chazal, Matan Torah, Kabbalah Satorah, is the ultimate Geirus of Klal Yisrael. Tevila, Karban, Kabbalah Samitzvos, we all became converts of sorts. We all became Jews through our Kabbalah Satorah. And at Kabbalah Satorah, we're told, Vatem Tili Mamleches Kohanim V'goy Kadosh. You want Torah? Kabbalah Satorah? Matan Torah? It demands Malchus. A Jew who became a Ger at Kabbalah Satorah, as we all do in a sense through Kabbalah Satorah, must recognize that Kabbalah Satorah demands Malchus. It demands a sense of pride, sense of conviction, sense of confidence that yes, Tayag Mitzvah at times demands Mesiras Nefesh, but I'm a Melech and I don't care what he says or what he thinks. This is how we live. The life of Torah is life of Malchus, and it is only through that confidence and that pride that we're Zocha to live truly a life of Kabbalah HaTorah.